Hi there. Once again, it's World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN and NPR Music. I'm David Dye, and our guest today is the musician-DJ known as RJD2. His latest album, his fifth overall, is The Colossus. If you are a fan of the very successful cable TV drama Mad Men, you know RJD2's music, as his composition is the title theme to the show. Today's cafe is a little different, as we have asked RJD2 to show us how he makes music from sampled vinyl, all the way from picking out the records in a crate somewhere. It's a fascinating story, and to start off, I ask him about how he got into making music to begin with, thinking that unlike many, you know, singer-songwriters or whatever that we usually have on the show, and considering RJD2 is a certified crate-digging record nerd, it probably didn't start with someone giving him an acoustic guitar.
Yes. To go back to the very first originations of how I got into music, I took dabbled between piano lessons and guitar lessons and playing hand percussion in a band and bouncing around, have a lot of different disparate musical experiences. I went to a vocational music school in high school and dropped out. And all throughout this period, I was the one constant was I was a record collector. And a friend of mine late in high school was selling a DJ rig with a bunch of records, and I wanted the records out of the deal primarily. So I bought the whole thing, intending to sell the turntables. However, had these turntables sitting around in my house for a while, and that's how I just fell into DJing, and that was in the mid-90s-ish.
Hmm. Like, now, what were you collecting when you were, what were you looking for when you were looking for music?
Anything. Vinyl was the default format on which I experienced music as a child. So, you know, when I was buying Michael Jackson or UTFO records or whatever was popular in the mid-80s, vinyl was the format. My parents' record collection included, you know, Kraftwerk and Philip Glass and the Beatles. And my parents were performers, so it leaned towards kind of more ambient, weirdo experimental music of the 80s and such.
Performers as in visual performers or dance? Or?
Yeah, my mom was a dancer and my dad was a performing artist, kind of
doing
different things.
And when you had these turntables, did you know what to do with them?
No, I didn't have any kind of, mentor or anything of that sort. So I just had it around and I was just self-taught. And that ethos is carried over into almost everything else that I do. I don't think I've taken any proper lessons since, 88 or 89 or something like that.
Hmm. And I think a lot of people point to your work with Megahertz, a band out of Columbus, a hip-hop group out of Columbus, as kind of being your first, kind of experience that people got to hear what you did. How did that come about, and was that as important to you as people seem to put it, up there on your resume?
I do consider it important because that was the first time I had anything on the quote-unquote scoreboard in the sense of having a record that I produced that was released.
And what were you doing for them mostly, putting beats together? Or?
Yeah, I was making beats, quote-unquote, or, producing. At first I was primarily just a DJ, but working towards, I could see the writing on the wall, in short, maybe about 97 or 98, that there were a lot of kids of my generation and my age that had been DJing for a lot longer, and they had a natural gift for it. And it was pretty obvious to me that it was a field that I had no chance of excelling in, but this other world of production was something that I really took to and I really felt passionate about. And kind of my previous experiences of listening to music and playing music and just thinking about the bigger picture of things, I think lent my brain to acclimating to that world much better than the quote-unquote battle DJ world.
Yeah, you kind of anticipated my question as to whether that... I was going to ask if you felt that the skills that was needed to be a good hip-hop DJ were limited to what you wanted to do, or, as you just stated, maybe that wasn't... There are people who might have been even, much better at it.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. There were people that were just better at it than I was, and I could see that, especially what I wanted to do on the outset was be one of those, competition scratch battle DJs. And the discipline that goes into that, it's just unreal. I mean, these people spend months and months and months honing one 3-minute routine. And it was just, it's just a level of discipline and focus that I'd like to think I have in other fields, but for whatever reason, I didn't have it in that one.
So you, you seem to have drifted more to this, to the studio rather than to performance.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the same skills you would have used, performing, such as finding the samples and, you know, getting the right recording and putting all that, finding out what goes together. You'd have much more time to do that in the studio.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a level of precision that you can achieve in the studio that, and that was another thing that I really got a lot of, I got an enormous amount of enjoyment out of, is this process of spending a long time honing and perfecting and revisiting and rehashing a recording to make it everything that it can be.
Well, you've offered to do something today that I've been really waiting for somebody to do on our show for a while.
Thank you.
We're fans of the Colossus, and the Colossus has so many different elements in it. And I tell you, listening to this album, I scratch my head a lot because I go, how did this happen? This is not him playing live, or is it? You know, I'll hear something that's, oh, that's a nice sample. And I'm really curious as to how you build up a track. And I was wondering if you could take something from this and maybe deconstruct it a bit for us.
Yeah, I'd love to. And if it's all right, I'd like to even take it a step further and kind of walk you through the process of essentially how sample-based music is made, and in specific how this one piece, particular piece of sample-based music is made. And the track that I'd like to start with is called The Stranger. It's entirely composed of found sounds, samples, pre-existing recordings. But to take it back a step a little bit further, people that do this, anybody from, you know, Dr. Dre to Kanye West to all of the classic 90s hip-hop producers, what you don't see in the recording is a lot of, and that I've found to be the most labor-intensive, one of the most labor-intensive parts of the process, is going out to record stores and sifting through hundreds, thousands of records looking for source material. So this is something that we can't really accurately recreate in the studio, but let's just pretend for a second that we've spent the last 6 days going out for at least an hour or two a day and, you know, coming home with filthy, moldy hands.
Okay, the questions are, where do you go to look and what are you looking for? Are you looking for something that nobody's heard before?
Yeah, yeah. In the mid-90s, that was the period of hip-hop music that I got involved in it. That was kind of just the default method of going about this, was you did not want to sample something that was, had already been sampled. And so most of the people that got into this ended up having this, you know, relatively encyclopedic knowledge of what samples had been used and hadn't been used and who they were, so on and so forth.
Well, okay. So here you are. You've been to the store. You've got a stack of vinyl here.
We've got a stack of vinyl here. I did not pre-select this. So I literally want to give you, the reason I did this is I wanted to give it, you know, as accurate of an experience as possible. So we're going to stick a record on a turntable and you're just waiting, seeing what you hear. Okay.
Does it matter to us who this is?
No. In fact, it'd probably be best if we omit who it is.
Okay.
But, you know, okay, skip ahead. Okay, not a whole lot there.
Are you looking
up tempo? Are you looking type of stuff?
Are you looking for something in the clear, or are you just looking for something that catches your ear?
Both. Mm. Yeah. And most people go about this usually, and I fall victim to doing this a lot. I'll just listen to the first 10 seconds and the last 10 seconds of a song, and I just you go through the record. But usually, what I'm looking for is isolated sounds. I'm looking for either a drum break that's by itself, or a bass line by itself, or so on and so forth. You know, sounds that are not piled on. Because once you can, if you can take those isolated elements, it makes it much easier to get a kind of a clean, crisp effectiveness when you start piling a bunch of those things together. So yeah, that's usually what I'm looking for. I'm going to skip on to the next song. Okay, same type of thing. Okay, there might be something there. You hear silence. Okay. See, in theory, you could probably run this back. And this flute part that should be coming up in a second. Right there. You might only get a couple notes. You get a lick, you get a lick here, there, you know, so on and so forth. So, I mean, that right there, you could,
oh my
you know,
God,
it's
yeah.
a rhythmic thing. Yeah. Actually, you could loop that. I don't know where, let me see if I can find that again. So there's some interesting stuff there. You know, and you, so that, you know, you'd probably stop there, and I would, at this point, what I would do is put a post-it note on the record and write, okay, side A, track 3, 1 minute in, some interesting noises. And I'd probably put a question mark, because it's questionable as to
how you would use
usable it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd keep going, and probably check the rest of the record. There's something. That seems pretty cool, actually. So, who knows? Maybe you dissect that and, you know.
Yeah.
So that would be the process, and you would do this for... I'm actually surprised that the first record that I put on
had
something. Because
yeah.
usually, like I said, I didn't plan this out, but by and large, usually the way this works is it's a lot of looking for not a lot of...
Let me just comment. Yeah, this is like looking for a needle in a haystack,
yeah.
number one. And number two, once you even get this stuff, you have to have an encyclopedic memory of what it is while you're putting together your other. This is not easy.
No, exactly. And this is precisely the point that I wanted to delve into this is because a lot of people look at sampling and sample-based music and they say, oh, that's easy. And yeah, if you're pulling out things from Michael Jackson Thriller, yeah, that's easy and it's pretty obvious. When you're not, there's this whole other level of labor that goes into it that you really can't understand until you do it yourself. So if you don't mind, here, I'm going to go yep. through one. We'll see where we get with this next record.
RJD2 is our guest today.
Okay. So you got some isolated piano here. It's pretty major. It's pretty happy. It's not doing much for me. Gonna skip on. Okay. Singing. Full band. Doesn't really help me. Okay, let's go to the intro to the next track. Acoustic guitar doesn't really do much for me. See, it's a major chord, which, you know, you can be somewhat difficult to work into a song. Nothing.
At what point do you pronounce a record a dud?
If I go through the first side of it,
yeah,
usually what I'll do is I'll skim, you know, right now this record is not looking so promising. I'm on track 4 now. You know, a little too bluesy, a little too happy. Well, that's this right here would maybe give me this put in the maybe pile enough that I would at least listen to the second side.
Ah.
If I didn't hear that, I would potentially just move right on. But it also depends if I bought 5 records today or if I bought 50. Mm. If I bought 50, I'm chucking this one. If I bought 5, probably going to work a little bit harder in trying to get something.
And you're not particularly interested as we've in what genre they are.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's...
yeah.
By and large, country and bluegrass music is really hard to find samples out of.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of it. You know, I am looking for somewhat particular things just in terms of instrumentation and sounds and effects and engineering. But no, genre-wise, it can be anything from, you know, gospel to funk to heavy metal. It doesn't matter. To me, at its highest... at its apex, sample-based music is taking something bad and turning it into something good. So what I most like is taking an element that doesn't work on its own that's either boring or just uninteresting. And through the alchemy of combining it together with other things, then it becomes something that's essentially greater than the sum of its parts. I can't say I always stick to that, but that is the goal. And when it works like that, I'm happiest. So that is what I'm shooting for.
All right, so we've done that.
Okay.
I'm wondering, for demonstration purposes, if we can maybe move to something you have found and see how you
yes.
build up on that.
Yeah. And actually, at this point, if it's all right, I'd like to transition into the sampler to kind of walk you through. So let's pretend that we just did for 5 minutes. Let's pretend that we had done that for an hour and a half for the last however long. So you start to catalog these things, and you've got all them, you know, they're all written down on post-it notes, and then you start taking those tiny little slivers of things and sticking them into the sampler, and you assign them to a pad. And so what I'm going to do now is basically just show you a bunch of different isolated sounds as they appeared on the record. And that was just one bank of the machine. So you've got
How do you, obviously this has to work as your brain in a way, how do you arrange things on there?
Usually if I'll try to cluster the drum parts into one bank or one program and maybe stick the bass in there. And then anything that is, so what you might notice on the radio, it's a little bit harder to identify, but this thing here I'm going to play is one sound that I chopped into 8 sounds. So you're hearing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So on the record, it would sound a little bit more like this. So I put those 8 sounds right next to each other so I can go. However you want to replay it. So, but other than that, there's kind of no rhyme or reason to how I keep this arranged. So as you can see, you know, if I play these on, those are 16 sounds that are not in any key whatsoever. It's just essentially noise. Once you have those dumped into the machine, for me, the next step is getting them all in the same key.
So you tune them up.
Yeah. Exactly. And what this is right here is essentially just a bit of a map.
RJ is holding a piece of graph paper, which has, a map of what's on the sampler.
Exactly. It's a map of this program, and what it is by default, all of these pitches would be set to 0. However, if you were to follow this graph and enter these pitch numbers in for each sound, then what's going to end up happening is all those sounds that we just heard, specifically speaking, they're arranged so there is not dissonance. So that's at least at one bank of the tonal stuff that contributed to this.
Now, I don't hear like a loop or something. I don't hear any like a rhythmic thing.
Exactly. So all we've done now is basically taken those 64 sounds and got them in the same key.
Gotcha.
But this, we have no idea what the feel of the song is going to be like, what the tempo is going to be like. And usually the way that I start, what dictates the tempo is I'll take the drum program and come up with a groove that that I like. So to go back to that thing of to do the same thing really quick for the drums, I have another program here that's it's all the drums, and I'm just going to break down the sounds, and I'm going to play them in the order that they appeared on the record so you can get an idea of what the feel on record sounded like.
RJ, I got to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot of work. Why not hire a drummer?
Still to this day, one of the things that makes me so enamored about samples is that you're essentially reaching back into the past and borrowing the engineering that went into these records. So while there's drummers, this, you know, and even the way that this thing gets programmed, a million people could make that feel. There aren't a lot of people that can make the drums sound that way. So that's a big part of why, really, I fell in love with sampling in the first place. By and large, those are the rough elements that you're working with.
Okay, so there you've got you've created a really nice loop, a really nice groove, and you've got the other elements there that would go on top of it. But the other things that make up a song are obviously some kind of a structure and some kind of a melody, and what leads you to those next decisions?
That's a really good question. So once you have kind of the drums down, usually what I'll do is I'll look for the next piece of interest, you know, as I was, you know, when we were going through all of those isolated sounds,
mm-hmm.
Certain things kind of jump out to you as is basically more interesting. And for this one, early on in the process jumped out as interesting were these horn stabs that were. I just thought they were cool. So if we run those back down to those pitches, then we get. So to go back to the sequence, you've got your drums in, and then the next thing that I added would be the horns. So you've got that. And then once you get that, it's kind of established a tonal center for the thing. Adding the bass in is the next kind of most obvious thing.
RJD2 is our guest, and we are we're finding out the basics of how sample-based music is put together. Are the things you're doing here universal?
A lot of them are, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For a particular time or I'd say moment, or you know, there's people out there that are still doing this kind of thing. You know, Kanye West is a very notable, obvious example. My favorite example is the guy I feel the most akin to is a guy named Just Blaze, who's done a lot of production for Rockefeller Records and Jay-Z and Cameron and Kanye. And he's kind of the foremost modern producer who does not only this. And another reason I'm such a big fan of his is that he does exactly this. But he also does other things. He does live recordings. He does. He's really kind of all over the place. So you know, this was a very popular working format and medium and approach, I'd say, from anywhere from 94, 95, 96, 97, up through, technically speaking, up through now. Most of what you hear on the radio and even moderately popular music is not made in this fashion anymore.
Mm-hmm. Do I dare ask how that's made?
As I understand it, a lot of it is made in, you know, Logic and Reason, and it's by and large done in a laptop.
It's a computer based. I think maybe now you should play one of your pieces.
Okay. Should I just play this track as
it
is?
Absolutely.
Okay. So this is The Stranger from The Colossus. By and large, there were some very, very minor amendments that were made in Pro Tools, but 99% of the piece is here coming straight out of the MPC.
And that is The Stranger, when you will find the fully realized, well, actually that version on The Colossus, the new album from our guest RJD2, who is with us today. And so all those sounds were from that, all those banks that we heard.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool.
For the most part, yeah.
Very cool. And I have to bring up that this is music made by other people who made records that they did or did not get paid for.
Yes, absolutely.
What are the legalities?
Well, I mean, you know, from a technical standpoint, what we're talking about is it's illegal. I understand the argument that it's morally reprehensible or frowned upon, and there's times at which I feel that, you know, I've done things that I think are morally questionable. I've done things that I think that are on the, you know, exact opposite of the spectrum. The one thing I do want to bring up that I think is important, just to give you context of what we're talking about here. For example, when I made my first record, Dead Ringer, in 2002, I didn't receive an advance to make it. I actually paid the recording costs. I had to pay the recording costs to make that record out of pocket. So the day that that record came out, I was in the hole about $1,500. So obviously I had no money to go out and clear things. And the other, you know, so that's, you know, one aspect. Another aspect is that this is just a culture and a climate in which independent underground records would be made in this manner, and they were not expected to sell a lot. They were not done as profitable business ventures. They were intended to be artistic statements. And that's why almost all of the small label, you know, hip hop music, and to that, you know, as well as electronic music and dance music and all that kind of stuff, was made in the last 25 years was for a creative statement. And there's a third element that I want to bring up that I think is also very important, is that, so now I, technically speaking, have the wherewithal to go out and clear a sample if I wanted to. The way that the legalities of copyright control are structured right now, if you were to approach someone to clear a sample, the first thing they're going to want is a percentage of the publishing. By and large, usually they're going to be looking at 25% of the publishing and up. 50%, looking to own 50% of a publishing of something that uses a sample is not uncommon. So you got to realize something has as many sounds as we've, you know, gone over. The numbers just aren't there, you know? So this is why, from my perspective, you know, I understand we could, you know, there can be moral debates made there, but the bottom line is that, you know, if you've got a song that's got, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 sounds in it, there's no way, for one, it would take you 10 years to make it, and two, there's just, the numbers aren't there. You can't split up, you know.
All right. Well, here's kind of a moral Rubik's Cube. Say somebody sampled "Let There Be Horns."
Oh, we've already been over this. I've been sampled, and yeah. And I'm not in court about it. You know,
But look at the different levels of that. That probably has a zillion samples in it, and then
exactly. Yeah. Well, for one, I'd have to be a pretty despicable person to, like, you know, be involved in sample based music and then get bent out of shape about it. I mean, right now there's like a Cisco ad that's very, 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 very blatantly obvious. It's running on TV right now. It's very, very blatantly obvious, the intro to Ghost Rider just replayed. I think it's tacky and I think it's lame, I'm not going to, like, go to court about it, you know? C'est la vie.
RJD2, I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN and NPR Music is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia at xpn.org. We also have our World Cafe Next podcast, and you can sign up for our daily newsletter about the show all at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. Thanks a lot for spending your time with the World Cafe.